All right. We're beginning here on the bottom of Pehei Amud Bet by the two dots. The Mishnah says, Imevin lo mebet hazvalim. Obviously, it's quoting the remainder of the Mishnah about areas that you can't bring from. And then one of those things is, Imevin akpangtan. You're not allowed to bring it. Vimhevi kasher. If he brings it, it is kasher. Now, the girsa that the Tosafot says that Rashi had in the Mishnah was, Imhevi pasul. I mean that there is no kashrut with regards to this. Now, we have to explain the question then based on that difference, which is, Vatanya, don't we have a braita? Emivin apaktan vemivi pasul. You're not allowed to bring it, and if you bring it, it is pasul. Mipneshu saraf. So the braita says the reason that it's not any good is because it's not really shemen. It is what's called mohel. It is the sweat or the liquid that is exuded by the olive. And that's what is the problem, because it's not really shemen. So according to the girsa that we have in our Mishnah, which is also the girsa of the Rabbeinu Tam, then it's very well understood what the Gemara has an issue with, which is that our Mishnah says, imhevi b'tiavad, it is kasher. Yet the Braita says, imhevi b'tiavad, pasul. So then you can understand what the problem is. According to the girsa of Rashi, it's somewhat difficult, because they say the same thing. The Mishnah says, you shouldn't bring it, v'imhevi pasul. And then you have a braita that brings it and says, Emevin, Vemevi Pasul. So then why is there a stira between the braita and the Mishnah? So Rashi in the Taviyad says, the Makom Shemin Korile. Our Mishnah calls it Shemin. As opposed to the braita, which seemingly thinks that it's not Shemin at all, our Mishnah that says it is Pasul still is Magdirit as being Shemin. So that, according to Rashi, is the problem here, is because the Braita is Magdirit as Seraph, whereas the Mishnah is Magdirit as Shemen. So how do I deal with that Stira? Seraph is used in other locations to mean the sap of the tree. But over here, obviously, it's not talking about speaking about the tree, it's speaking about the olives themselves, the sap of the olives, which would be this liquid that is exuded, not the oil itself. Amar Rav Yosef, Lokasha, HaRabbi Chia, HaRabbi Shim Barabi. It's not a problem. It has to do with different people's approaches to this. The Rabbi Chia Zorikle. Rabbi Chia used to throw this out. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi Matvil Bey. He used to use it as a dip, as an oil dip. So Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi was machshivit. He considered it to be something of significance, and he treated it like shemen. On the other hand, Rabbi Chia thought it was worthless and threw it out. Now the Bible tells us, let's say, he didn't really throw it out. He just didn't eat it. He used it for other purposes, which we'll see in a second what the purpose of it is, but he did not eat it, he did not throw it out. B'simanich, and the way to remember this, Ashirim mekamtzin, the wealthy are miserly. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi was the son of Rabbi. Rabbi, you know, was extremely wealthy as a nasi. Rabbi Shimon takes over for him afterwards, and Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi is extremely wealthy, yet he's using what otherwise might be considered to be subpar oil. He uses it for his food. He thinks that it's good enough. And he uses it like shemen. Whereas Rabbi Chia thought it was worthless and was willing to throw it out. So according to Rashi, where in both cases it says it may be pasul, the difference was whether it was called seraf or shemen. That has to do with your approach. For Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi, it was shemen. And he used it like shemen. He used it as his dip for his salad, for his bread. On the other hand, Rabbi Chia tossed it out. He didn't think it was shemen. He thought it was seraf. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, that the Mishnah says, imevi kasher, whereas the Braita says, imevi pasul, the Mishnah would be authored by Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi, who thinks that it is oil, and therefore, b'diavad, if you bring it, it's okay. Whereas the Braita is authored by Rabbi Chia, who thinks that it's not oil at all, and that's why he doesn't utilize it. Now, what is the purpose of this? Or actually, truthfully, what's the meaning of this anpaktan that is mentioned in our Mishnah? It says, Shisha Chodoshim B'Shemen Amor. This is from Esther Haggai, who was in charge of prepping all the women to meet Ahasuerus. It says over there that she used to sit for 6 months in Shemen Amor. My Shemen Amor. What exactly was this Shemen Amor? V'hunu Bar Chi Amar Satachta. Rabbi Yirmi Abba Amar Shemen Zayit Shloi Vishlish. Is this Shemen Satachta? And Rabbi Yirmi Abba clarifies for us more that it is Shemen Zayit, olive oil, Shaloi Vishlish, that hasn't gotten past a third of its maturation. So it's immature olive that is used, so that the oil that is produced from it is a lot more pernicious, it is more acidic, and therefore it has properties that we're going to see in a second, which is, Tanyo, we have a Braita, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anpaknon, or maybe possibly Anpaktan, which is what the word is in our Mishnah, Shemen Zayin Shelo Yivi Shlish. It makes it synonymous with what we saw before, the Shemen Amor, that this is Shemen Zayin that comes from an olive that has not reached one-third of its maturation. Lama Sachinoto. So then why did they use it? So here, this is the answer to what Rabbi Chiya did with it. He didn't throw it out, but Sachinoto. They used to use it to anoint. They used to put it on as a cream. Shemeshir et ha-se'ar u'me'adin et ha-basar. It causes the hair to fall out. It's a depilatory. And me'adin et ha-basar and softens the skin. So that's why it was used. It was used as a depilatory plus as a skin cream, a skin softener. So that was its purpose. And now that's what Tosafot says. Rabbi Chiya, when he threw it out, he didn't throw it out. He just didn't eat it. He used it for this purpose, which was still a good purpose, but it wasn't really shemen. It was this very pungent type of liquid that had these properties that were good for the skin. And that's why the women used to bathe in it in the time of Esther in their preparation for meeting Achashverosh. The Mishnah says, Eme vin min agargarin shenishru b'mayim. We don't bring from the gargarim that were soaked in water. Disqualification here of emevin agargarim shenishru b'mayim that were soaked in water. Bechuchas the Rashi on the Mishnah says that these are the zeitim shenaflu. They fell v'nishru b'mayim and then were sitting in water. V'shahu b'em arbe and they stood there for a long time in the water. They cannot be used for the oil that comes out of them because it's subpar oil. Or the oil isn't any good because of the water that it was soaking in for that period of time. And that's the same thing with kavush, shaluk. Their shemen is not a good quality shemen because of the other variables that were added to the olive itself. And then he brings inin acher, min agargarim shenishru. Those are from the olives that fell off by themselves. Ein mivim otam zeitim, she'ein motzim shmanam. They don't give good oil. Elim kein nishru b'mayim. Elim kein, something else was done to them, including soaking them in water, cooking them, or pickling them. So the question is, they were good olives, but because they were placed in these other items, that diminishes the quality of the oil, or were these olives that would not produce oil unless you put them into these items or did this processing to them, and that's why they're disqualified. But those are the two different Lashonot that the Miyuchas Rashi brings on the Mishnah to explain what the issue is with regards to this. Tanu Rabbanan. Shemen Zayit Kavush, if it was pickled, Shaluk, it was cooked, Sharui, it was soaked, Veshel Mshimarim, that was made from the residue, from the dregs, Veshel Reach Ra, or has an unpleasant odor to it, Lo Yavi, you may not bring that on the Mizbeach, or you may not bring that to Mikdash, Vemevi, Pasul, and if you do bring it, it's no good at all. All of these are disqualified. By Rabba, so here is Rabba's question that he's asked on the last number of Mishnayot. Higdisho mahu shilake alav mishum ba'mum. If you're makdishit, do you get malkot as if you were a makdishi ba'mum? We have a principle that Rabbi establishes in other places that when you were makdishi ba'mum, which is inappropriate because it doesn't belong in the mizbeach, you get malkot for doing such. So the same thing here. Rabba wants to know when you're makdish something that's inappropriate, which is, imevi pasul, if you bring it, it's going to be no good. Do you get malkot? Came into pasul kabal dumum dami. Since it's disqualified, it has the same status as a balmum. Or maybe balmum is terminology that is reserved for using by animals, which has a particular meaning. It means something that has a blemish in it. That's the only area you're going to get malkot for. But otherwise, even if you bring something pasul, while you won't be able to bring it on the mizbeach, nevertheless you won't get malkot for being makdishit, take it, we leave that as an unresolved issue. Next Mishnah, Shlosha Zeitim Heim. There are three different types of olive. Ubehem, Shlosha, Shlosha Shmanim. And each one of those olives has three different types of oil that it produces. Hazayit HaRishon, the first one, now first here means both seemingly time-wise, the first one to come off the tree, as well as Hazayit HaRishon means the highest quality of the three types of olives. Mir gargaro birosha zayit. You pick it from the top of the tree. Now I'm loosely translating that. That is Rashi and the Ketav Yad's explanation over here, is that these are olives that sit at the top of the tree, they're exposed to the sun, and therefore they mature the earliest or the fastest. So you're going to actually, according to this view in the Rashi Ketuv Yad, it seems like you're going to pick the olives at three different stages, and that's what it means. We're going to see in the Mishnah that each time he goes to pick, he picks it different sections of it because it depends on their exposure to the sun and where they are on the tree. So according to the Rashi in the Ketuv Yad, you're picking the top of the tree, which are most exposed to the sun, which means that they mature the fastest, and they're most robust of the olives that you're going to pick. The Baya Tosafot are bothered by that because of the Mishnah in Peah. Mishnah in Peah says that you're only chayav in Peah if it's davar shelikatoto ke'achad, if it's harvested at a single time. So when you harvest at a single time, there's a din of Peah. If you harvest at different times, there's no din of Peah. You can understand very well why that might be, because when you harvest all at once, it makes sense. You can leave off a section or Peah from the items that you're picking. If you're picking it at different times, then the aniyim never know when to come to get the Peah, because they never know when you're going to leave the Peah or how you're going to leave the Peah. It's very difficult to measure Peah in that case. So that's why Peah is only applicable to something like Kitato Ke'achad. And the Mishnayot tell us that olives are chayav in Peah. So if olives are chayav in Peah, means they're all picked at once. According to the way Rashi is explaining over here, they're picked at three different times. So the Balei Tosafot brings from the Oruch. Migargar means klomar locate echad echad otana muvushalim, and that lefishim it bashlim kulam biyachad, that they didn't all ripen at the same time. The Oruch perish kaperish akunchis. So he says that the Oruch explains like Rashi. So then, how do you deal with the fact of the Mishnah and Peah? So the way to deal with that is to suggest that even though they ripened at different times, and maybe even were supposedly here picked at different times, the truth is that they used to just demarcate them and know where they were on the tree in terms of their quality. Doesn't mean that they actually picked those first because they were the ripest, but rather they used to pick them all at once, but they used to know which ones were riper first, and therefore they knew the quality of the olives when they went to pick them from the different sections. So that's the first one, is migargaro birosh hazayit, rikotesh, and then you crush them, because if you don't crush them, if you don't do some processing to the olive, it does not automatically exude oil. Oil doesn't come out of it. So first you crush it, and then you place it into a basket. Rashi says the purpose of placing it into the basket is that the basket acts as a filter, which is that the olives, after they're crushed, the olive seeps out of them, but the basket holds on to the residual of the olives, doesn't allow them to flow through, but the oil flows through. So that's the oil that comes out. You don't place them at the base of the basket, but around the sides of the basket, because then the shemen will drip down to the bottom and maintain the olives on the outside. If you place them in the middle, like the chachamim, the olives and the shmarim and the dregs and the other stuff will mix together, and it won't be as pure when you come out. Zerishon. That's the first of the first olives. This is the first oil that you're going to get, is that which drips out of the basket. Chazar betoin bekorah. Afterwards, then you place them under the beam. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, babanim. You actually place stones on them. Ze sheni. This is the second oil that comes out. So the olives actually were kept in the basket. The reason to keep them in the basket is that when you put so much pressure on them, when you place a korah, which is a very heavy beam, or stones on them, they would start to disperse to escape the pressure. So the way to keep them inside and underneath the pressure is to keep them in the baskets. So they maintain them in the basket, and then they place something very heavy on them. You can see this in numerous places in Eretz Yisrael. They've reconstructed these olive presses from the time of the Mishnah. And if you go to Beit Guvrin, they actually have one that is inside one of the caves there. And you can see that it was a huge, huge beam that was on a fulcrum that had a hinge in the wall itself. And so it was able to be raised and lowered using the fulcrum and the hinge in the wall. And then they used to hang stones from the beam in order to increase the weight of the beam and then make it that it would sit there for a number of days and press the olives. So the korah, it of itself, was heavy. And then they used to add stones to make it even heavier. So it might be that the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda are speaking about different places, what they used in terms of the weight. Or it's possible that both items were used in many places in order to create the weight on the olives. But in that way, the olives are pressed now, and then they leach the oil from the pressure from the korah and the stones, and that gives you your second oil. Chazar v'tachan. Then afterwards you go and you mill them. You place them into the stone mill and you mill them. V'ta'an. And then you place them into the korah under pressure again. Zeshlishi. That is the third level of oil. Harishon. The first oil that comes out, which is like the extra virgin oil, limenorah. That is kosher for the menorah. And that is because the menorah requires shemen zayit zach. Zach is a requirement that it be actually extremely pure and very clean, and might also have a requirement of what we call tari, to be fresh, meaning very soon after they're picked and pressed, that's the type of oil you want to use for the menorah. V'ashar, number two and number three, are limenachot, are good to be used for menachot. That's because mincha only requires katit, that it be crushed, but it doesn't require anything else. It doesn't require the zach aspect of it. The shemen katit is a demand that it be cut up or crushed to get the oil out, but it doesn't have the requirement of zach. And therefore the second and third, which aren't as pure olive oil, not as clean, they are good for the menachot. Hasheni. So now we said there were three different things. Hasheni, migargaro berosh hagag. You pick it. Now, according to Rashi and the Ktav Yad, who follows his Perush from before, that means that you pick those that are level with the roof. The first ones you picked at the top of the tree, which were exposed to the sun. The second ones are at the level of the roof of the house, so they got less sun than the ones at the top of the tree, but they're the second ones to ripen along the way, so that's why you wait to pick them, because they aren't as exposed to the sun, so they take longer to mature and to be full of oil. So that's one way to explain it, so that you pick those zeitim that are at the middle of the tree. In that way, the gag is simply a siman. It's an indication of where they are on the tree. It's not that they did anything with the gag is just an indication of the level of the olives that you are picking. The other one is, margargaro berosh hagag, is that these are olives that do not fully ripen on the tree. They're placed on the roof, which they put many things on the roof to dry them out or to have them exposed to the sun. And that would be the purpose here too, is that you would leave them in the sun for a period of time in order for them to finish ripening or soften. And that's why they are megargaro berosh hagag. You pick them to place them on the top of the roof. And there likely is a correlation between the first megargaro, where if you believe it meant picking from the top of the tree, over here you would probably explain that it means picking from the level with the gag. On the other hand, if you believed in the first case, that picking from the top of the tree didn't necessarily mean that you actually picked them off, but those are when you harvest all the olives off the tree, those are the ripened ones because they were exposed to the sun, then over here, you would more likely subscribe to the explanation that placing them on the gag to ripen them, because when you picked everything at once, there were some that were more ripe than others. Vikotesh. And again, he does the same process as we did with the first case. Cuts, chops them up, crushes them. Notein l'toch hasal, you put them into the basket. Biodo mer svivot hasal, around the edges of the basket. Ze rishon. The oil that comes out of there is the rishon. Toein bakora, if you place them under the weight of the beam, meaning this is the pressing part afterwards. Biodo mer bavanim, where you place stones on them. Ze sheni, that's the second level. Chazar v'tachan, then he puts them into the mill, v'ta'an, and then he places them under the weight, again, of the korah or the avanim, zeshlishi. That is the third level of oil from the second grouping of olives. Harishon l'menorah, the first of this oil is good enough for the menorah. V'ashar l'menachot, and the remainder can be used for menachot. The second and third level can be used for menachot. Shlishi, the third set of olives that are picked. Now, according to the way that Rashi said it before, these are going to be the olives at the bottom of the tree, whatever is residual, but the bottom of the tree, because they got the least exposure to the sun. They are most shaded, and therefore they don't ripen on the tree at all, and therefore they have to be put into otno bebeit abad. You actually put them together, you squeeze them together, and leave them in the beit abad, ad shi lakeh. Until they start to soften or rot a little bit. And that they're so hard when you pick them that they're not even good enough to put oil in them. The Rambam has a slightly different view of what megargaro is. Over here we said megargaro and then we spoke about picking. And picking at the top, the middle, and the lower part of the tree. That's the way Rashi in the Ktav Yad explains it. We saw in the Perush Rashi that megargaro begag is not necessarily where on the tree they are, but rather the olives that you need to put on the roof. And then the third olives are here, the olives that you need to stick together until they soften. So the Rambam actually in Perush Mishneot explains Megagro means that he's discerning. Megagro Mazayit means he goes around the olive tree picking those that are the ripest. So it's not necessarily a level where on the tree they are, but rather you go and search. Certain of them ripen before others. Could be the outside ones, could be the ones at the top, whatever it is. But Megagro means that you are discerning and you are picking the ones that meet the criteria that you have at this point in time. That's what it means, Megagro. So what you do is you place them together, you bunch them together into like a group, and then they start to work off of each other. They start to rot a little bit or start to warm up. That softened group of olives, Maleu, Umagnagvo, Beroshagag. Then you take them up to the roof, which again, where the sun is, and you actually dry them out. Because the liquid that leached out of them when they were sitting together and started to soften or rot is actually just a water, again, a mohel that comes out of them. It's not real olive oil that's coming out of them. Kotesh, then you crush them, notein etoch hasal, and then you put them into the basket. Yehuda omer, svivot hasal, on the outer edges of the basket. Ze rishon, that which drips out of that is the first oil. Again, that's the oil that can be used for the menorah. Tovein b'kor, after that, you put them under the heavy beam, Yehuda omer babanim, under the stones. Ze sheni, that's the second level of oil. Chazar v'tachan, then he puts them into the mill again. V'ta'an, and puts them under the korah and the stones. Zeshlishi, that's the third level. Harishon, the menorah. Again, the first oil of these is good for the menorah. V'shar l'minachot. So you have three different stages of olives, or types of olives that are picked. In each of those cases, the first oil that comes out of them is oil that can be used for the menorah. And the second and third can be used for menachot. Okay, we'll discuss why you have to discuss all three, meaning that there are actually nine types of oil that come out of our Mishnah. Why does it have to tell us about all nine types of oil? Just tell us the ones that are good for menorah and everything else is for menachot. Ibailu, migargarotnan o migalgalotnan. What is meant in the Mishnah when it says migargarot? Is the word that's being used here really migargar, which is what we have in our Mishnah, or should it have been migalgal? So if you think the word migargar means you leave it there until it reaches its full maturation, then the question is, what's the better lashon, migalgalo or migargaro, which implies that more distinctly. On the other hand, if you believe migargaro means that you pick the olives, then there's actually a difference in migargaro, which means that you pick them, versus the migalgalo, which means that you leave them to ripen on the tree. And so it would imply that Megargaro is that you pick them even before they've fully ripened, or you're picking certain sections of them, not waiting for the tree in its entirety to ripen. The Tashma, the Tanya, Shemen Zayit Mizeito. You have to bring Shemen Zayit from the olive. Of course you bring Shemen Zayit from the olive. Mikan Amru, Zayit Rishon Megalgalo Berosha Zayit. That the first Zayit, you, Megalgalo Berosha Zayit. So that would make it sound like you let it ripen at the top of the tree. The konsola beit abad. Then you bring it into the press. The tochano berechayim. And then you mill it. Vinodno besalin. And then you place it into baskets. Shemen hayotze mimenu zehaya rishon. The shemen that comes out of that, that's the first quality, the extra virgin oil. Tan bikorah. Then you place the heavy beam on it. Shemen hayotze mimenu zehaya sheni. The shemen comes out there is the second level of oil. Chazaru parak v'tachani undoes the whole weight system, and then tachan he mills them v'ta'an and then puts them back under the korah or the stones. Zayah shlishi, that's the third level of oil. Harishon l'minorah, the first oil that comes out is good enough for the minorah. Bashar l'minachot, and the remainder is good for minachot. B'chein zayit sheni, the zayit sheni is exactly the same, which is the same process, is what our Mishnah said. Zayit shlishi has this one difference, which is otno b'beit abad achi lakeh. And you first bundle them together in the press until they start to soften and they rot in together. Then you take them up to the roof. And then you make them into this bundle like a date. The way that Rashi explains it over here is that you have it wider at the bottom, narrower at the top. You stack them up. Until the liquid leaches out. Because that liquid that comes out at first is not oil. It's the liquid that's caused by the heating of them together, the rotting of them together, that you want to dispose of. So that water you want to get rid of. The konsola beit abad, then you take it into the press, tochano berechayim, benodo besalin, put it into baskets, v'shem neyotze mirenu zeya rishon. All oil that comes out is the first oil. Tam bekorah, then you put them under the weight of the beam or the stones, shem neyotze mirenu zeya sheni. Parak chazar v'tachan. Then you take it out again, dismantle all the weight system. Then you mill it v'ta'an, and then you put the weights back on it. Zayah shlishi. Harishon the menorah. The first is good for the menorah. V'shar the menachot. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yat tochano berechayim. You don't mill it in order to crush it. Ela kotsho b'machteshet. You put it into the crusher, not into the mill. V'lo yatuein b'korah. And you don't put down the beam on it. El avanim. You put stones on it. V'lo yanodo b'salin. You don't put it into the baskets. Ela toch svivot asal. On the edges of the basket. We already know that from our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda dissents about these items. The Gemara says, ha'gufa kasha. The Braita seems to cause a problem for our Mishnah, which is that there's now an internal stira in the Mishnah. Because kotesh mani. Who's the one that says you require ketisha? That's Rabbi Yehuda. Tochasal, the one who requires you place it in the basket, atan rabbanon. That's the rabbanon. In our Mishnah, it says that you don't mill it at first. You are kotesh at first. You just crush it up at first. But then it says you put it into the middle of the basket, because we know in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, not in the middle of the basket, put on the side of the basket. So our Mishnah seems to be picking something from Yehuda, something Rabbona. Do Ketisha, but do it at the bottom of the basket. Put a Korah on it, and then Rabbi Yehuda argues and says, put Avanim. So it's partly the Rabbona and partly Rabbi Yehuda. So it says, Haitana, Savalaka Matei Bechado, Poligalei Bechado, Enochanami. He believes Rabbi Yehuda is right with regards to Ketisha, that's from the Katit, that it be done and crushed, not put into a mill. But he doesn't agree with them with regards to the Korah and the basket. There he says you can put it in directly into the bottom of the basket. You don't have to put it on the sides of the basket. And you can put a Korah, you can put a beam on it, and you don't have to necessarily put stones on it. So he disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda in those two issues. But in the first issue, he does agree with them that you do it through Ketisha and not through a Rechayim. All right, so that's the view of the Braita. The Braita began with a statement which is Shemen Zayit Mizeito. It has to be a shemen zayit that comes out of the zeito, which again, what does that mean? The Meuchas Rashi says, mizeito, shiva zeitim bi'ilan, achi tiyad behem shemen. That's the explanation of the megalgalo, which is that they have to stay on the tree until the oil is present in them. So that means you leave them on the tree to ripen, and that's why the Braita uses the term megalgalo, which is that you wait for them to ripen on the tree, you don't ripen them afterwards after you've taken them off the tree. Whereas Rashi in the Ktav Yad says, Zayit Mizeito, Klomar Homer Harayalai Shemen Zayit, someone who takes a neder to bring Shemen Zayit, Yeah, Shemen Sheet Bashel Vit Malesh Mano Ba'udu Bazayit. The olives that he brings have to be from olives that were left on the tree until they ripen fully. To Krok Adorish Mishemen Zayit Zach, Klomar Mibushal Shiatzami Menu Blotiina. They have to be fully ripened so that they produce oil without being pressed. So that means that they have to be fully loaded with oil and they have to stay on the tree long enough that they actually have oil coming out of them without actually being pressed. And that's why you put them in the basket first after you crush them in order to allow it to leach out before you put the weight and the press on them. So that's what, according to Rashi and the Ktav Yad, this is Zayit Mizeito, is someone who took a neder to bring such Shemen Zayit to the Mikdash. On the other hand, the Miuchas, the Rashi, seems to indicate that Mizeito just means the type of olive that you're going to use in order to produce the oil over here. And again, the word Megalgalo is used in the Braita, which indicates that it ripened on the tree. So according to the Balei HaTosafot, that tells you that you wait for all the olives on the tree to be ripened before you pick them. And that's how you get L'kitatam Ke'achad. Whereas for the way that Rashi explained it before, that you're picking them at different times, that means that you are taking them off as each section becomes ripe. That's when you're taking off Megalgalo. Next Mishnah, and this Mishnah gives us an indication as to why the previous Mishnah took so much time to explain the different processes. Harishon Shibirishon in Lamala Armenu. The first oil that comes out of the first olives that come off the tree, there's nothing better than that. Olive. That is your aleph, that's your extra virgin olive oil, that's the best that you can get. Hasheni shibirishon, barishon shibisheni shavin. The second oil from the first group of olives that were taken off, and the first oil from the second set of olives that are taken off, they are equal. What the Mishnah is about to say is, if you add up the numbers, then that'll give you the equality of the oil. Which means that there's nothing better than 1-1, because there's no other numbers that can add up to 2. There's nothing worse than 3-3 because there's nothing else that adds up to 6. In between, you have different stages. For instance, in the first olives that were processed, the second stage, if you add those together, the first olive, second stage, that's 3. There are other 3s, which is the second olives in their first stage are also 3. So those are of equal quality. So that's how you would determine it. You add up the numbers and you would know what the quality is equal to. Hashlishi shebirishon, the third level oil that is pressed out of the first set of olives, b'sheni shebisheni, and the second from the second olives, varishon shebishlishi, and the first of the third section, they all equal 4, then shavin, they're all equal. Hashlishi shebisheni, the third oil that comes out of the second group of olives, v'sheni shebishlishi, and the second oil that comes out of the third group of olives, shavin, because they both equal 5. Hashlishi shebishlishi, ein amate menu. The third level of the third olives, there's nothing worse than that. It's 6. When you add them together, there's nothing else that can add up to 6 that gives you that level of oil. So here they are grading the oil for you. The truth is that all menachot should also require shemen zayit zach, which means this pure, clean oil. Ma menorah she'en ala achila, the menorah, which is not used for consumption, tuna shemen zayit zach, it requires the purest and the cleanest oil, menachot she'en achila, menachot which are for eating. Now, it's not clear here, although it's probably assumed, there are two types of eating by menachot. There are certain menachot that are kalil on the mizbeach, and so the eating is the achilat on mizbeach. There are certain menachot that have a komets that goes on mizbeach, and the remainder is eaten by the kohanim, which would be achilat adam. In the Kal Vachomer here, it would seem to me that it's referencing to the achilat on mizbeach. If something that is used just to light, then certainly something that's going physically on the mizbeach should be even purer quality. So shouldn't they also need shemen zayit zach? Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, zach katit lema'or, vein zach katit lemenachot. So when it says, shemen zayit zach katit lema'or, it tells you that the zach is only something that's required for the lighting. But that tells you lema'or velo lemenachot. So even though had you not had that, you would have assumed yes for menachot, because you have a mute in the pasuk that tells you that the shemen zayit zach katit is only for the ma'or, not for the menachot, and that gives you permission now to use the lower grades of oil for the menachot. So that's the Mishnah. Shavin, the Gemara wants to know, wait a minute, how can they be equal? Ha'amart rishon l'menorah v'shar l'menachot. How can you tell me that number 2 of the first grade of olives and number 1 of the second grade of olives are equal? But in the Mishnah, it tells us that the first oil that comes out of the second group is good for the menorah. But if the second from the first group of olives is not good for the menorah, it's only good for the menachot. Amrav Nachum Yitzchak, my shavin, shavin le menachot. That they are equal in their quality for menachot. So over here, the Balei HaTosafot make a suggestion, which he rejects later and then favors Rashi's interpretation. He says, shavin le menachot, aval le menorah inan shavin. They're not equal for the menorah. Ve'in zach ala naki v'arishon olam naki. So when it says shavin in the Mishnah, it means that they both can be the same level for menachot. They're both good for menachot. But it's not talking about the menorah aspect. The truth is they're different for the menorah. The number 1 of number 2, second group of olives, is good for the menorah. Number 2 of number 1 is not good for the menorah. But they're equal quality for menachot. That's what Tosafot says. But Tosafot says then afterwards, the Mishnah says that explicitly already. The first Mishnah already gave you that information. The first Mishnah already told you that the number 1 is good for the menorah, and everything else is good for the menachot. So why do I need this second Mishnah to tell me that information? So therefore he favors Rashi's explanation here in the Ketav Yad, which is that, t'kaimelon b'chol duchte mivchar nidarecha, that you have to bring from the best of that which you bring, demina mavchar yavi. When you bring a korban, you have to try to bring the best. And that's what happens with Kayin and Hevel. Why Hashem rejects Kayin and accepts Hevel's korban is because Hevel brought mimivchar, from the best of what he had. Whereas Kayin just brought what he had. He didn't bring the best. There's a demand when you bring anything to the Mikdash, or you're fulfilling a neder in the Mikdash, that you bring the highest quality. And that's what Rashi says the nafka mina is. Shavim the menachot is telling you what is the grade of this oil for the quality in terms of the menachot. And what it's telling you is, number 2 oil from the first set of olives and number 1 oil from the second set of olives is of the same grade. And that is because even though for the menorah, there's a distinction, because the menorah has an additional requirement of zach, that it be absolutely pure and have nothing else mixed in with it. So that extra qualification by menorah makes a distinction between the first oil of the second group of olives, where it's good for the menorah, versus the second pressing of the olives in the first group, which are no good for the menorah. But as far as menachot are concerned, they are of equal quality, and that means if you're trying to decide which one to use to bring of your best, either one of those would suffice. And that's because there's a trade-off in the oils. Yes, the oil that you get from the drips, the first stuff, is the most pure of oil, but it still doesn't, first of all, give you as high a quality in oil, and may not be as fresh an oil as the other one. So that's why in the case of the first group of olives that you're pressing, that oil that's coming out may be a better quality oil, but it's not as clean as the oil that you're getting from the second group of olives with the first oil. So the first oil from the second group of olives is cleaner, but it may not be as high quality. That's why if you look at them from a menachot standpoint, they're actually on equal level. And that's how Rashi and the Taviyat explains it, that you're trying to grade the oil. And the grading of the oil makes a difference, because even though it may not matter for the menorah, it matters for the menachot, because you're trying to bring the best oil. And when you're trying to determine what's the best oil, here's the grading system to tell you what's best, what's equal, and what is the worst of the qualities of oil. Af kol menachot ayu b'din, that they should have come from zach. Tan Rabbanan, zach ain't zach ela naki. It's absolutely clean. That's what the necessity is for the olive oil that's used for the menorah. Yehuda omer katit. This explains to you the shita as to why you don't put it into the rechaim, you don't put it into the mill, but rather you crush it, because katit means to crush, to break apart. It does not mean to put it into a mill. Zach katit pasula menachot. You would think that if it was zach and katit, the menachot would be no good. Tamalomar v'isaron solit balul b'shemen katit. Katit works for the menachot as well. Imkein matal melomar lima'or. So then why does it say shemen zayit zach katit lima'or? Makes it sound like katit is what you use for lighting. Katit is not what you use for menachot. But now we see that there is balu b'shemen katit that's used by the menachot. So then katit is okay. So then why does it specify ma'or? El b'nei achisachon. It is because of the savings. Ma'i chisachon. What are the savings over here? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Torah chasal momenam shel Yisrael. Torah had mercy on the expenditures that they would have to undertake in this case. If you have to purchase the purest olive oil, absolutely zach, both for menachot and for the menorah, there'd be a huge demand on that pure type of oil, and it would be more expensive than it already is. It's already expensive, and it would drive the prices up and make it very expensive. Number two is the menorah only requires a limited amount of oil because you're just lighting from it each day. If you also include menachot, that starts to increase the volume significantly of items that you would have to bring from this oil. And that would then require a lot more oil, and that would cost a lot more out of the budget of the mikdash. So because of that, the Torah only requires shemen zayit zach katit la ma'or. So that's katit and zach are what are required for ma'or. But for menachot, all you require is katit. You don't require a zach. Tzavet b'nei Yisrael, v'ichu elecha shemen zayit zach. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, elecha v'lo li. For you and not for me. Lo la'ora ani tzarich. I don't need the light of the menorah. Shulchan b'tzafon u'menorah b'darom. The shulchan is on the northern side, and the menorah is on the southern side. So here the Baal Yitosafot note that maybe that is as opposed to the western side where the Shechina is. So that shows you that Hashem doesn't need them, otherwise you should have placed them on the western side. He rejects that because they are placed to the western side. They are in the Kodesh, the menorah, and the shulchan are pushed towards the western side. They're from the halfway point and onward. From that Mizbech sits right by the halfway point. And the menorah and the shulchan sit closer to the western side. So that's not the real reason. He says he favors Rashi's interpretation, which is the shulchan and menorah are on opposite ends. One's on the north, the shulchan, one's on the south, which is the menorah. If Hashem really needed the light of the menorah, you'd put the table and the menorah together. Because that way you'd be able to see what you were eating. And normally that's what people do when they eat in their house. They put the menorah near the table. The fact that menorah is not near their table says two things. First of all, that which is placed on the table is not for Hashem to eat. And number two is, that which is the menorah, there is not light that Hashem is needing. It's for us. Amar Azik, Amar Belazar, lo la'achila anit sarich, lo la'orah anit sarich. I don't need to eat that which is on the shulchan, and I don't need to light that is from the menorah. Vayes labayit chalunei shkufim atumim. It says that he made for the Beit HaMikdash windows that are shakuf, would be clear, atum would be sealed up. So which one is it? It should be tana shkufim ibachutz. They are wide open on the outside, va'atumim ibifnim. And they are sealed up, they are narrower inside. So that shows you, lo lora anitzarich. I don't need the light. When you do something like that, you want to project the light in the direction where you're going. So you leave the wider side out, and then the narrower side in. So that means that the light from the inside then projects outwards into a wider way. If you were trying to bring light into there, you'd make them narrow and then widen them as you go in, which would allow more light to disperse inside. So that shows you that they don't need the light on the inside. It's not made for internally. It's made for externally. It's made to allow the light to go out. It's really like a siman, that the Mikdash is a beacon that shines light out to the world. The Kedusha, the spirituality, the presence of the Shekhinah, then is projected out from the Mikdash, and the shape of the windows are indicative of that. Michutz la parochet ha'edut ba'ol moed. It is placed outside of the parochet ha'edut in the ol moed. Edutu l'chol ba'olam she'ashchinah shura b'Yisrael. This is evidence of the fact, an edut, that the Shekhinah is shura b'Yisrael. If God needed the light, it should have been inside the parochet where the Aron is, where the Shekhinah is. The placement of outside is indicative or an edut that Hashem doesn't need the light. Bim torar lo'ura aneit sarich. If you say that I need the light of it, all 40 years that they were in the Midbar, the Eish led Bnei Yisrael through. Hashem's presence was the light for Bnei Yisrael. So you think we need to light something for Hashem? Hashem himself provides the light. So the Rabbeinu Tam also brings a different version that maybe the Kohanim need the light. And there again it says, no, Hashem's Shekhinah that was present with the Eish provided enough light that you didn't even need the menorah, even at night, in the Mishkan. But rather, it is evidence of the fact that the Shekhinah dwells amongst Klal Yisrael. So according to the first explanation, the two questions or two issues are correlated, because if I don't need the or from the Adakat HaNeirot, then what is the purpose of that? That's Eidut L'chol Ba'i Olam. That's one way to read it. But as we noted before, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that maybe it has to do with the Kohanim, which is that there are two stages in the Gemara, which is the first stage is that why is the menorah on the outside? Because that's the evidence of the fact that the Shekhinah is Shura b'Yisrael. It is an Eidut L'chol Ba'i Olam. And then separately, there's a question, Mechila Ora Tz'anit Tzarich, do the Kohanim really need the or of the menorah? And therefore, it's actually two stages to the question. And the first one is where the placement of the menorah is. The second one is, because of that placement of the menorah, you might come to mistakenly think that the Kohanim need the or. And that's what the second one is, the chila ora anit sarich. So there are two separate questions here. It's not about the edut, but rather there's one answer which is edut. The second answer is about the chila ora anit sarich. In the first situation, the answer about Eidut is because of the Chilora Nitzarich. That's why that it's there is to provide the Eidut. And so there in the first explanation, the Eidut is connected with the second part of the Braita. Whereas in the first case, the second of the Braita is a result of why, if it's an Eidut and it's not in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, but out in the Kodesh, you might think it's for the Kohanim, and then we dispel that. My Eiduta, how is there evidence of that? Hamarava Zen Ner Maravi. That is the Western Ner. You put in the same amount of oil, or kamidat chabrota, the same volume of oil as the others. He used to light that first and end with that last. So I'll explain that in one second. So now here you have this idea that the menorah is edut. The menorah is an edut, both because it's placed outside of the area where the Shekhinah resides in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, it's in the Kodesh. And number two is, it's for you and not for me, because I have my own light. I can provide light. And I did that for 40 years in the Midbar. And so then, why do we light the menorah? As evidence of the fact that the Shekhinah is present. What is that evidence? Because the Nerim Aravi never blows out, it stays lit forever. As the Baal Tosfot will point out, that was in the time of Shimon HaTzadik, where the Nerim Aravi was always lit. It was a Ner Tamid. Rashi in the Ktav Yad says that the menorah stood north to south, and the Nerim Aravi was actually the middle Ner, and the middle Ner faced towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and the other Nerot faced inward. Miuchas to Rashi, on the other, brings that the menorah stood east-west. It happens to be a machloket we're going to get to in about 10-11 daf, as to which way the menorah stood, east-west or north-south. So here you have Rashi and the Ktav Yad saying that it was stood north-south, and you have Miuchas to Rashi saying that it stood east-west, and then the Nerim Aravi, it's a machloket actually, whether the Nerim Aravi is actually the westernmost Ner then that was closest, or the way it seems from the Gemara is that it's the second one from the east. The eastern one is the most east of the Nerot. The one past that now becomes the Nerim Aravi, because it's closer to the west than the first one. So you don't have to be all the way to the west. It's the second one from the east is already called the Nerim Aravi. So that's the difference in opinion about what the Nerim Aravi was. Number two is, then what happened with the Nerim Aravi? So it seems, and there's different opinions brought here, as well as on Tzadichet, where they discuss this, as to what this means, that they used to light from the Nerim Aravi. And that is that they used to light the menorah ben arbayim, in the afternoon. They used to do hatavat ha-nerot in the morning, which means they cleaned them out, put in the new wicks, and set up everything up in the morning. And then they would light them in the afternoon. Then when you light them in the afternoon, they would go overnight, last all night. So that would make sense because overnight is the time period where it's dark and you would expect them to have a menorah to have it be lit. And that then is the meaning of what the Braita is saying. The chilo ra ani tzarich? Do I need the light? So the presence of the menorah and it being lit at night is nothing to do with the necessity for light. God doesn't need the light. The Kohanim don't need the light. So that's not the purpose of the menorah. Rather, the purpose of the menorah is edut. It's evidence of the fact that the Shekhinah is present. That presence or that edut is through the Nerim Aravi. So that is that they lit it at night, and then they would come in the morning. When they came in the morning, they would find the Nerim Aravi, the western Ner, still lit. And so then they would cleaned out all the other Nerot, and then they left the Nerim Aravi like it was. Then they would come to the afternoon, and when they came to the afternoon, they would either, there are two versions, Rashi here in the Ktav Yad, Rashi later on, where either they used to light all the other candles from the Nerim Aravi, and then after they did that, they would clean out the Nerim Aravi, replace it, and then light it again from the other Nerot that were already lit. Or the way that Rashi explains it later on, is actually they took the wick of the Nerim Aravi out, and then they cleaned out that stuff there, and then they put it back in afterwards. They lit it from that Nerim Aravi all the way along. Although the Baal Tosfot quote from the Rashi later on where he says the wicks were super long on the other Nerot and they were able to pull them over to the Nerim Aravi and light them so they didn't have to take the Nerim Aravi out. So that solves some of the problems that you have about Madlikim Miner the Ner versus putting it in an intermediary to light it, which might be problematic. So here, the Nerim Aravi lasted, according to this, until the afternoon. Rashi brings two possibilities in the Ktav Yad. Either it lasted until the morning and then they would fix it, blow it out and relight it. Or other times it would stay lit all the way till the afternoon and they would light from it in the afternoon. But either way, that Nerim Aravi with the same quantity of oil would remain lit. The Rambam, you should just know, is different than many of the other Rishonim, but he believes not only did they light the menorah at night, they lit it in the morning again because of the word tamid. And the question is, how do you understand the word tamid? Does tamid mean every day? Which is, tamid can be something that is on a recurring basis, consistently recurring, or does tamid mean always? And so the Rambam reads tamid as being always, and therefore he requires the menorah to be lit around the clock. The other Rishonim read it as tamid means that every day it must be lit. So in the afternoon you light it. It doesn't have to be lit during the daytime. So that's a difference in halacha with regards to what you do with the menorah after you clean them out in the morning. Do you relight them? Or do you simply fix them and wait till the afternoon to relight them? That's machloket Rishonim. So then this is important just in general. It's a big distinction between the pagan practices of the time and the Mishkan. The pagan practices at the time, they used to have a menorah and a shulchan. And the items that were there were supposedly to feed the god and to provide light for the god. What the Mishkan does is tells you that that's not the case. Meaning that it intentionally goes out of its way to demonstrate the fact that that's not the case. The breads that are put on the Shulchan are eaten by the Kohanim. They are not given, quote-unquote, to the God. The menorah, here, we say, is not for the light of the God. It's for us and for our purposes, which means it's evidence of the fact that the Shekhinah is present in Klal Yisrael. And that's also furthered by the fact that, number one, it's outside of the parochet, so is the Shulchan, and that they're not near each other. They're opposite ends. So therefore, it indicates both of those items, that it's not near the Shekhinah, and also it's outside, and they're far away from each other. So it has nothing to do with God eating and God's light. Rather, it's a presentation to God, but then eaten by the people. And this really is very distinct from the pagan practice at the time, and an indication of the idea of worshiping a monotheistic, non-corporeal God. That's what's indicated through the Mishkan, and the practices that differed so dramatically from those practices at the time. Okay, the next Mishnah, we move on to the wine. We've spoken about so far the oil and the solet, the flour. Now we're up to the wine. Where do they source the wine from? From where do they bring the wine? Kiduchim v'atulim alfa the yayin. These two locations are, number one, the best place to bring wine from. Shnialem, the second tier, is Beit Rima u'Beit Lavan Bahar. It's Beit Rima and Beit Lavan in the mountains. V'kvar Signa b'Bika, and Kvar Signa in the valley. Kol ha'atzot ayuk shirot. You can bring it from anywhere. Ela mikana you may be in. But they brought them from there because those were the highest quality, the best quality, and they want to bring the best quality. Emi bin, lomi beit azvalim, similar to what we saw by the olives. You can't bring it from a field that is fertilized. So that either, the Rashi over there brought two interpretations, meaning that it's a field that necessitates fertilizing, and therefore you get subpar grapes because the fact that it needed fertilizing, or a field that gets fertilized, that fertilizer has an impact on the quality of the grapes, and therefore it's problematic. Velomi beit ha-shlachim, not from fields that need irrigating. Velomi b'mash nizra b'nehem, and not from fields which have other items planted in between them. Now, if you plant other items in between them, you have what's called kilei akerem, and it's asur ba'ana. So we're clearly not speaking about that. So either it's vegetation that's allowed to be planted in between them, or even if it is grains that are planted, they're planted at the requisite distance. That would not make it kilei akerem. Despite that, we don't want you doing this because it weakens the quality of the grapes. It takes away either from the nutrients of the ground or for whatever other reason, it's causing some detriment to the grapes, and therefore we don't want you to bring them because it lowers the quality of the grapes. They may be, but if you do bring from these areas, kasher, because all of these are still grapes and it's still wine that is produced, that has to be lower quality wine. Amy being a listion. You don't bring from the listion. If you look in Ot Tet of the Shita Mikubetzet, he says, listion, a liyoston, is the girsa of the Oruch. The Shemesh Nikra B'Lashon, Yavan, Elios. Or really it is Helios. Helios is the sun in Greek. And so the listion here, or a listion, or a listion, means Helios, or means the sun. And that's how Rashi explains it over here. These are grapes that were made sweet by the sun. Sheshayu tolin et anavim la-shemesh. They used to hang the grapes towards the sun, and therefore they were sweetened by the sun. The Balei Tosafot note over here, it doesn't mean that they were picked and then hung to the sun, which is what seems to be implied in what Rashi says over here, but rather they were still on the tree. They were left there to sweeten in the sun. And that's similar to what we find in the Miyuchas, the Rashi, where he says that it is, Shenitvashloa Navim Bachama Yoter Midai, that they stayed out on the tree too long, and the sun caused them to ripen beyond what would be the normal ripening stage. But you see there, it's still on the tree when the sun is impacting the sweetness of those grapes. So either way, it's sweetening by the sun. The Balei Tosafot would say it's done on the tree. Rashi seems to imply that it's done after it's picked. They hang them in the sun in order to cause the grapes to be sweetened. They may be, again, kasher. If you bring it, it's kasher, because in the end, it's still wine. Emi v'in yashan, divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says you can't bring aged wine. It seems to mean that it's over a year's old. Rachamim makshirim. Rachamim say it's totally fine. Emi v'in lo matok. You can't bring sweet wine. Over here, Rashi brings two interpretations as to what matok means. Either a matog means me'elav, it just happens to be very sweet wine, sweet grape, sweet wine. Or it says tirosh, that you're not allowed to bring grape juice. And there the disqualification would be like, because of Kodesh, asek neser sheikhar la Hashem, that only midi de mishaker is qualified for yayin ala mizbeach, which means only after 40 days, where it's fermented already, does it have a din of yayin that goes on the mizbeach? The Baya Tosafot on tomorrow's daf are going to say to us that matok cannot mean what Rashi says over your tirosh, grape juice, because of a gemara in Baba Batra, which brings a brayta for Rabbi Yechia that says bidiavad, grape juice is good. And our mission over here is going to say in a second that these items are psulim, even bidiavad. Therefore, the Baya Tosafot rejects Rashi's explanation. Lo mehushan, you can't bring smoked grapes or smoked wine. Lo mevushal, and not cooked wine. Vemevi pasul. These are psulim not only lechatzchila, but even bidiavad. Vemevi in min adaliot, elamine ragliot. You can't bring from the daliot. Daliot are, as Rashi, in Miuchas Rashi and Rashi say, trellises. Those are grapes, which they do today many times, is they run the grapes along trellises to grow. Elamine ragliot, from those that are by the feet. The one that run, the vines run on the ground, that lay on the ground, those are better quality grapes. Umina kramim avudim velon. And they bring them from fields or vineyards that are worked. Velon konsimoto bechatzavim gdolim. And you don't bring it in or you don't make the wine in these very large vats. Elbe chaviot ktanot, in smaller pitchers. Because they used to open them up and they wanted to maintain the quality. So once you open it up, the wine will start to deteriorate. So if you use very large vats, once they take it out or start using it, there's going to be some sort of deterioration in the wine over time as they use it. So they wanted to minimize that, so they used to have the wine be made and stored in very small pitchers, so that way when you opened it, you'd use most of it up in a very short period of time. And when they fill up the barrels or the wine casks to have them ferment, they don't fill it all the way to the top. They leave some air space there. They should give space for the, they call now the aroma of the wine to expand, but in essence to give it room to ferment. So otherwise it's going to start to push out of the barrel. Here you give it room to ferment and expand inside of it. You don't bring it from the top of the barrel. Because of the flour or the white stuff that floats to the top. You don't bring it from the base of the barrel, because of the sediment and the dregs at the bottom of the barrel. You bring it from the, either it means the one third in the middle, you don't take the top third, the bottom third, but the middle third, or it can mean here, you put a tap in the middle. Typically you would tap towards the bottom, so that everything would come out of the barrel. Here you're going to tap towards the middle, so that way you don't get all the stuff at the bottom. It stays above that level. And therefore the meaning would be, you put the tap right in the middle, which would mean the middle of the middle third. Or the other possibility is, which means that you are taking out the third that is in the middle. So that way, it's not speaking about where the tap is, but the wine that you're going to take out of this barrel is the middle third. The gizbar, the treasurer, the one who's in charge of bringing the wine for the mikdash, he stands there with a staff or a stick in his hand. Zaraka gear, as soon as the tap starts to show some whiteness coming out of it, he smacks with the stick, whether he smacks on the ground, on the barrel, or on the individual who's doing this. And then they shut the tap, because that already means that it's gotten to the top part where there's already that white residue on the top that you don't want. So that's why he stops them from taking it. Rabbi Yusuf Omer, sheyesh bo kemachim pasul. If it has kemachim in it, not only is it not good lachatchila, it's even pasul b'diavad, shneemar, tmimim yiyu lachem. So the pasuk in the Musafim in Bamidbar, Chof Zayin, pasuk Yutet says, So that's the end of the pasuk. The next pasuk begins, Umin chatam solet lulav shemen, shlosha esronim la par, shni esronim la ayol tasu. And then later on, in pasuk lamed alvet, milvad olata tamid, umin chato tasu,
Tmimim miyulachem v'niskehem. So the tmimim miyulachem, which is mentioned all the way at the beginning of the korbanot of Pesach, is a reference not only to the korbanot themselves, but also umin chatam solet b'lulav shemen, that the solet and the shemen also have to be tmimim. And then the pasuk way at the end of uveyom abikurim from Shavuot, it says milvad olat tamid umin chatot asu. Tmimim yulachem v'niskehem says that the nisachim as well have to be tmimim. And therefore tmimim means clear, pure, and unadulterated. So for Rabbi Yossi Reyuda, the kamachim make it into the equivalent of a baal mum. All right, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. I'm going to save for tomorrow the major discussion which comes out of this Mishnah. I'll just give you the highlights, and then we'll discuss it more in depth tomorrow, which is the Mishnah over here says that that which is mibushal and that which is matok is no good for the mizbeach. The Gemara in Baba Batra tells us that you can only make kiddush al yayin that is good enough to go on the mizbeach. That means if it is mibushal or if it's matok, one of the explanations that Rashi gives over here was tirosh, grape juice, then you can't use it for the mizbeach. Well, if you can't use it for the mizbeach, that also means you can't use it for kiddush, and that's the major issue that comes up with using yayin mivushal and grape juice for kiddush. Is it allowed or not allowed based on what we're seeing here in our Mishnah? So we'll leave that for the discussion tomorrow. We're going to stop here now by the Gemara on Pei Zayin Amud Aleph.